Wisdom of Mary Thomas. Mary Thomas is a name known to many. For such a tiny woman, she had a big impact on everyone she met. From her humble beginnings to her time at the residential school in Kamloops through her adult years, drenched in poverty and despair, she overcame obstacles that would have destroyed most people. She told us over and over again that is the only way she could keep going was through the love of her children and her passion of her native culture. We spent the day with her children and grandchildren, teaching her traditional crafts and telling stories was for her the best days, especially if it ended with a trip to the bingo hall. Despite her many accomplishments, accolades, and awards, she remained to the very end a humble woman, wanting only to help wherever she could and asking for nothing in return. She was sharp and intelligent with a quick wit and enough political savvy to know when to speak and when to be silent. The love she gave was returned threefold, never more evident than at the service to honor her passing, when people of all ages, color, even nationality were in attendance to pay their respects. Mary Thomas, beloved and missed.
And I learned a lot of the stuff that I know from my mother, who died at 102, my aunt 103, and I think there are a lot of social problems that has to go with the story behind our natural foods. I'm working with Nancy Turner from UVic. She's an ethnobotanist professor. Nancy and I go way back. We've been friends from way back before I even got involved in the foods. And I talked to Nancy about trying to revive some of the edibles, some of the medicines. What we're going to be doing when I identify the medicines, we will be taking the stuff back to the lab and breaking it down. Nancy has started, as you will notice, she's got a book out and they'll be published. On the back of this, you will notice that we've broken down the different kinds of the name, the Latin name of the plant, and we've broken down the content and what part of the plant is being used. This book is very, very detailed. The only thing I'm kind of a little bit disappointed with this book, it's not in color, therefore it's kind of hard to, and there aren't that many illustrations. And the other one that she has, not totally a part of hers, but together with other professors, they have put these, you probably have these ones, they're quite common. They have the pictures are in color, and it's very, very, you know, you can identify the plant just by looking at the colored pictures. So I highly recommend these two books. And there are other little books done by different professors, but they're, Nancy always has a say in it. She has her part in those books. But I think this one and that one are one of the highly recommended books that I would suggest if you're going to go in depth into your studies. And also, it's really interesting to know that some of our plants are very, very poisonous. Some are medicinal and some are just food. And the thing that you have to really pay attention is in the formation of the leaves to identify your plants, because a lot of them, if they're growing together in a slough or wherever, you'll notice the flowering on some of those plants are almost identical. So you have to really know the formation of the leaves, and that is why I strongly recommend this book. It gives you the detailed, like if you're going to be, say you're going to go and study the willow, Then you have the different kinds of leaves or different kinds of willow. And it just goes on so forth, like, because I think that is very important. You will notice when I do your studies that we emphasize strongly on the leaf formation of the plant. The leaves differ, but the flowering are almost identical. And if you don't watch what you're doing, you're going to end up eating something that's very poisonous. Okay, we'll continue with the slides. You all know who that old bag was. Mushrooms are good eating, providing there again you know what you're gathering. I've only got the one here. This is what we call the oyster mushroom. There's a big demand for this type of mushroom. And what my concern is, a mushroom, when it deteriorates and it gets kind of black and turns into powder, that's how they generate, like reproduce. Now, a lot of this is being picked, and this is part of your conservation that you have to know about. Mushrooms do not grow from seed. It grows from it going black and turning into powder, and that is what generates when a wind blows it, and it generates from that black powder. Now, if they're going to continue picking all our mushrooms out of the wilderness without letting some of it generate on its own, then down the road a few years, you're going to end up with no mushrooms. And there's another type of mushroom that we've discovered is what we call the cottonwood mushrooms. These are more like around underneath willows and more in the meadow type of mushroom. Now there's two other mushrooms that I haven't got a picture of yet, and that's what we call the morellis. They're early in the spring. These mushrooms go in season. They don't all come out all at once. The morellis are the first ones. They're sort of like a little cone-shaped plant. They just come, and then there's a straight little stem inside, and they're just like a little cone-shaped cap. Very delicious in the spring. And then later on, maybe around about October, we will come across another type of mushroom, and that's the shaggy manes. You'll find that out in the mountains where it's rather cool. The shaggy manes are very white, and they got little, I guess they derive their name from the looks. They just look raggy on the outside. When you pick it, you just scrape off the outside, and they're pure white. And what I generally do with all my mushrooms is I crack an egg, and I beat it good, dump it in there, and take them out and roll it in cracker crumbs or flour mixed with salt and pepper. And I deep fry it, and it's just delicious. Almost tastes like chicken. This one here is quite common around here. The one thing that I'm really worried about this plant is what we call acocha, the Indian celery. You find that all over this area used to be just heavy with them. Now that is eaten early in the spring. The stem before it flowers is gathered, and you peel that and eat it like that. Or you can chop it up and put it as a spicer in your stews or meats. And then when it dries, you can gather the seed for... This is a close-up of the acocha. And there's the seed. You can gather those seeds and pound it or leave it like that, put it in a cheesecloth and put it in your stew to flavor your stews. They've got a very rich flavor. Now this one here I think you're all familiar with. You see, these are local plants. This one is what we call our wild rhubarb. We see that along going to Armstrong, you have some up the canyon. There again, we're starting to lose those plants. I notice they're getting fewer and fewer. This is a close-up of the leaves. I try to get as much of the leaf in picture so that you can learn the formation of the leaves. And there's a stalk that is edible. Just before it gets into bloom, you'll notice like a little white bulb on top. That's when it's ready to eat. After that stage, they become woody. You can't eat it. Now, I've got this pine in the picture. What I want you to understand that all evergreens have a lot of sugar content. We're losing that because of the clear cutting and taking down all our huge trees. The next picture will give you an idea. We couldn't, like that has the cones, as you know. And yet the cones are, the nuts are edible. And this, oh, what happened to my...
It's in a little bit.
The branches.
It's a little bit. That's that timberline pine, this one.
Oh, okay, let's just keep that going then. Okay, what I'm trying to get across is any kind of evergreen has a lot of sugar content. What we did this year, we experimented with, you know, when the fir trees start to get the new growth on the ends, a real light green growth on the ends, you can pick that. Pick a bunch and boil it, put water and boil and boil and boil, strain it, put it back in the pot, the fluid, and mix it with honey, a little bit of honey, and set it, and it'll gel, and it's delicious for sweetening your teas. You don't need to use sugar. Sugar is refined, and it has no food value, just the taste. So to get the natural sweetener in your whatever tea, whatever you want to drink with a little bit of sweetener, the fir boughs, the ends of them, the little delicate light green fir boughs, you can make a sweetener because all the evergreens carry a lot of sugar content. The nuts are very nutritious. They can take the place of meat, red meat. This one here is quite another familiar plant around here. The balsam or the yellow sunflowers we call a smukaka or sanpanopia. This one here, if you have an open cut, open sore, or poison ivy, any skin irritation, if you take the leaves, if your irritation is weeping, take the leaves, dry it in the oven or out in the hot sun. When it's thoroughly dry, you take it and you crush it and work it with your hands so it's like powder. Then you take the root, you dig the roots, they're very, very deep-rooted plant. You almost have to dig from here to China to get to the end of it. They're very deep-rooted. Now, if you get a root like this, you wash it really clean, and put it on a hard surface and get a hammer and just hammer away. The crust on the root is very, very solid. It's hard. You have to use a hammer to crack it open. Once you crack it open, you clean it, take all the crust off, and slice it up fine and boil it. And this is what is used to wash the sore. You keep washing it 2 or 3 times a day. If it's weeping, take some of that dried leaf and pat it on. 2 or 3 days, your poison ivy is gone. And also, this plant is edible. The fine roots, they're very young plants. If you get them, wash it and pit cook it. You put those in the pit cooking. They cook and you can take the outer bark off and eat it. There's a certain amount of sweet, it's a sort of a sweet tasting root, and very, very good for you. Now the medicinal part of this medicine isn't just the pulp in it. If you boil it, if you boil one of those big ones and leave it stand, you'll notice it has a thin film of pitch in it, and that's the pitch is the medicine. So never wipe it off when you wash an infected part. Leave it open, let it dry on its own. And you've got that thin film that is the antibiotic. This one is what we call the nodding onion. That one I have on the table here. It's not in bloom, but it just gives you an idea of what the nodding onion looks like. When you come up to see, you'll notice this one here. You have to be very careful. There are different species of onions. And I remember my grandma used to gather a lot of these, and when you get it out of the ground, you lay them out in the hot sun to wilt. The tops will wilt, and when they're wilted, she used to braid them and hang them up to dry. And when they were dry, we use that in the winter time, like you use onions now for flavoring. Now here is another kind of onion, and this one grows all over with that kucha I noticed out going towards the overall to Armstrong. It is just all over, and that one is very, very poisonous. Be very careful. When you're going to gather food, make sure that you go there, look at the flower of those plants and study the leaves. That one has sort of a fairly flat leaf, where this one here is tubular. It's got a round tubular leaf, and that is very important to know. The onion, the bulb on this one looks identical with this one. Okay, now the Sama name.
This is it hellebore? This is hellebore, is it?
Hellebore?
I think so.
This is where I have my problem. I have a hard time identifying it in the English, but I know them by their Indian name. That's why I like to have Val with me. She knows the Sama name. This one here is a gargle. There's another medicine I'll be talking about. It's a gargle. You cannot drink this, but it is very good when you get that strep throat. That was used. That one is not neelma. Picoa. Picoa? That's what we call it. This one here is the... the root. Picoa root. There's the bulb. And you notice the carrot looking kind of leaf it has. Now there are other plants that look exactly like that, and you have to know what you're picking. This one here is what they call the water parsnip. The Indian name for that one is Achtamech. It's very, very sweet when you wash it. This one is eaten way in the early in the spring before the greens come up. If you wash it really clean and then break the stem, the little roots off and eat it, it's crunchy and very sweet. There's the top. Notice the top, and now just take a good look at the leaves. Long, slender leaves, and I've got some here. They've got very long, slender leaves. Now this one here, you can't see the leaves very good on there, but notice the flowering.
And this is the water hemlock, is that?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to see the leaves. I guess this is where we have to get some professional.
Is this the poisonous one that's compared
to
the
other? Water hemlock. You'll notice the leaves on this one here, we were talking about the previous one, has straight long leaves. Now this one has straight long leaves, but they have little jagged edges like a saw toothed edge. And that's a poisonous water hemlock. Very, very, very poisonous. Now that one, you'll notice the root. The root is totally different from the water parsnip. This one here, if you cut that bulb, a yellow substance will ooze out of it, and that's the poison. It was said that the elders talked about this plant a long time ago when our people feared the enemy coming in. They needed some poison arrow tips. They cut open this, we call ini. They cut it open and they dip their arrowheads in it and leave it to dry. And if you get that arrowhead in you, you receive that poison from this plant. And that one is ini. This one is...
Silverweed.
Silverweed. I don't think we have a... We have the silver leaf, but we didn't gather the... I see we don't have a sample of this silver leaf. That is also edible. This is a good plant. You can eat the roots. This one here you're quite familiar with is our Indian potatoes, the squaquina. I'm afraid this is a plant that needs a lot of discussion to look after them. Even way up in a mountain, they're getting smaller and smaller. I went all over this spring to try and find some fairly big ones. They're getting smaller and smaller. And the reason why our plants are disappearing, and this is going to be a part of your brainstorming. What we found where we were digging the squaquina and the squeak, there's about 4 to 6 inches of very thick, dry sod. There are a lot of introduced grasses, different kinds of weeds are being brought into our country, and they're just multiplying and out there just thick. On top of that is the cattle grazing. The cattle walk in there, they stomp it down. I don't know what to suggest. Maybe some kind of restricted areas where the cattle can go for 1 year and let the other parts rest. And I don't know if that's the answer, but we'll leave it up to the conservation officers. This one here's the avalanche lily. This one is suffering, but not near as bad as the spring beauty, or squaquina. We call this our squib. The roots are not as big as I remembered them when I was a little girl. We used to go with our grandma to gather the roots. This one here, you can dry it. I remember our grandma used to get the real big ones she laid out in the sun. When they're wilted, they turn kind of soft. They string them up with the inner bark of the maple and dry it, and that was pit cooked. I got a little bit of a sample in this bag here of the dry. You'll notice when you come to look at it. This is dry. Now, when this is pit cooked, anything that's cooked in the ground, you're bringing out the sugar content. A very interesting workshop I went to, this was quite a few years ago when I was living in Kelowna. I had a little guy that gave me, the welfare gave me to look after. He was epileptic, hyperactive, he was kleptomaniac, poor little guy had everything. So I had to go to take lessons in how to deal with children. And they were talking about the alcoholic families. And a doctor from way middle of Mexico somewhere was there, and he was giving a talk on the Aboriginal people's addiction to alcohol. And he was the one that brought out this research they had done. They had researched all the edibles and the contents in them, and compared it with what we're eating today, all the food value in the natural foods had a lot of sugar, which our bodies need. But when we changed our diet to bleached flour, bleached sugar, all refined, everything, all the food value has been taken out of it, and we started adapting to that type of food, our bodies began to crave that sugar that was in our natural foods. And then when we started taking the alcohol, we were feeding that craving, and that's why our bodies are so easily adapted to alcohol, because of the sugar content. And I guess this is one of the things that sparked off Louis, who was talking to some people about it. And apparently in Hawaii, they have a program they experimented with. They studied all the natural foods that the people there ate, and they started a diet based on those foods. Our people are becoming either too thin or too fat. Our whole system is unbalanced. And when these people over there, some had sugar diabetes, some had some kind of a slow-growing cancer, they found when they went onto that native diet that they became well, they became more balanced. And we're hoping out of this whole thing that we can start something like that. That is one of our visions down the road somewhere. We're hoping that we can try somewhere before it's too late. And this one here, you'll notice if you eat it when it's fresh, it tastes really good, it's crunchy, it's nice, it's a vegetable. And when it's dried and you pick cook it, you're bringing that sugar content out of the vegetable, and that's very good for you. Here we have the root. You notice how small those poor little roots are. And I noticed in our walks, when this time of the year, the fields would be just full of the seed. They look like this, and they'd be just loads of them. Today, if you walk up where this Squeakquenequa grow, you'll be lucky if you see one of these, about maybe 8-10 feet apart. This, once the seeds start disappearing, what is left in the ground is going to be gone. Because this is the type of plant that generates from another seed. They're like the mushroom. The mushroom doesn't grow automatically. I said when a mushroom dries, it forms a powder, and that's what regenerates. Now these seeded type of plants are going to disappear, because I notice already these are far in between. And you see how tiny they're getting. One time these used to be about 2 inches high and about at least an inch in diameter, but look how tiny they're getting. And that scares me very much. We're losing I think some of these things we're going to have to bring up to those bureaucrats to make them realize that things are not looking as nice as they seem to think. This one is the tiger lily. This is also edible. The roots are edible, but very, very strong. They're like, you think garlic is strong. This one is 10 times, but it's good for you. This one is the roots from the chocolate lily. The chocolate lily generates from those little kernels, and also from the seed. I remember when we were children, we used to dig the chocolate lily roots, and our kid, I used to tell us to leave some of those little kernels. Some call it chocolate lily, some call it rice root, because of those tiny little bulbs that's on there. We used to bury a lot of that in. Here we got a cluster of all the stuff that we went through. And then with that big black blob up there, that's the wheelock. And this is the wheeler grown in the trees. They hang on trees of black moss or lichen. This is a close-up of just freshly picked. You tear it apart and pick out all the little particles, and then you wash it. When you put it in water and you wash it and you pull it apart, take all the little particles out of it, it has that feel like when you first make a dough, a bread dough, and it's slippery and, you know, smooth, lifted. That's how it feels right there. And once it's cleaned thoroughly, then it's pit cooked. When they're cooked, they look like this, black licorice. I had some of this, we did a 3-day symposium on silviculture in Vancouver, and I had some of this on my table, and those young students from the university came along, a whole bunch of them, and they said, "What is that black stuff?" I said, "That's my bannock." I cut a little thin sliver and I chopped it up in little pieces and I gave them each one. And in the Indian way, when you give something that people don't understand, you eat first to prove it's good. Well, I ate mine and I'm standing there and they're smelling it. And I said, "You're not supposed to smell that, you eat it." So they ate it and said, "Ooh, it has a taste all its own." I said, "Sure it does." I said, "You guys are taking silviculture and you're going to be up in a mountain. What if you run out of food, there's no water to be had, you're tired, and you're starving, you're lost, and you don't know what to do?" And I said, "You're going to lay down under a tree to die of starvation, there'll be food hanging above you. If you happen to be lost up in a mountain, you got nothing to eat, you're hungry, take a handful of that stuff and chew it like a gum. You can swallow your stick. Now, this type of food, when the snow gets yay high, the animals cannot forage deep down to feed. They have to reach up, and that's what they live on all winter. Now, that can sustain a moose, deer, elk. Look at the food value that's in it. That can help us." And our people ate a lot of that. We're all familiar with the Saskatoons. I like Saskatoons dried and then boiled with bitter roots. And I roll little bits of dumpling and put it in there and it tastes so good. Basketful. Choke cherries were dried also. And when you dry your foods and then you stew it after, you have very little sweetener added to it. And if you have lots of that per bow sweetener, you don't need sugar. Huckleberries, you're all familiar with. Black caps, loganberry, I don't know what they call it. The black currants makes good jam. These soft fruits were made in the fruit platter. I remember when we were little, when we were exceptionally good, we used to watch our grandma reach under her bed. She had a sugar bag full of goodies. Oh, we thought, now we're going to get our reward. It was really something for her to pull that sugar bag out. And in it would be bannock about that big of that fruit platter. And that was our treat. She'd break a chunk off and give it to us. And oh, did it ever taste good? I can remember that. High bush cranberries. This is quite common. You can make high bush cranberry sauce. And I also have a low bush cranberries on the table here. You will notice when you come up to look at our collection. This one is what we call a swamp cranberries. They grow flat on the ground. And there again, the leaves are almost identical with another plant, which is good. There's no fear of, what do you do with the other plant that looks like there's an all right here? What we call the snowberries. If you notice that the plants almost look identical, but the berries are different. Now this one here is a low bush, and we'll go with that. And it makes good cranberry sauce. Only thing is, that one has a different taste than that one. That one has a flat seed inside and very tart. This one here, if you taste it, tastes just like the one you buy in the store, those big cranberries. The only thing, these are getting smaller and smaller. The berries, you can't find them like what they used to be. They were really big like the cotton ones in the store. This one here, the same kind, almost identical kind of leaves, have little white berries, and these they call the snowberries, the mountain snowberries. This one here was used as a drink and a bathing for pregnant moms. It's got a very nice smelling plant. And they had that belief that whatever condition the mother was in, that it had an effect on the unborn child. And that's why they make the young moms drink a lot of this. We call this an effect. It's something like the kinnikinnick and gut. Okay, here we have the famous soup alley. Pass the dish around. The wild raspberries is another type of berries that was made into fruit leather. This was made into fruit leather. Kinnikinnick has a very dry tasting berry, but it's edible. Our grandmothers used to pick that and put it in the broth, boil it with meat, deer broth, and eat it like that. And I noticed last night we stopped at some friends in Vernon after the session down on reserve, and the man had picked some of this kinnikinnick and they were putting it through a processor, and he was going to mix it in his tobacco to smoke. It's a tobacco anyway. Here we have a variety of fruits. The hazelnuts are very good food. They take the place of the meat, the protein in the meat. All nuts have that good protein. This is the borderline green, evergreen. They grow way up in the north. And this is the branch I was talking about. You can't find any of that. Nancy said she walked all over BC mountains. You can't find that. There's a natural sugar coming out of the branch, and it's just covering that whole branch. And that's how you can prove that all greens have a lot of sugar content. We had to take that out of the archives because we couldn't find any anywhere. And I attribute that to the clear cutting. They're taking down all our big forests, and those are the ones that have the overloaded sugar. This one is your Indian tea. I have samples of it. You'll notice when you look at the Indian tea and the sukalali have a very similar type of leaf. It's got that silver lining on the bottom side. When you look at the two kinds of plants that I have here, the Indian tea and this one here, we'll talk about that later. This one is another type of tea that you will see out around the dry areas. They make good tea. And I'll know about the peppermint. It makes another good tea. Oh, this one here is the, what do we call that in Indian? Hellebore. Indian hellebore? Oh, kikawa. We call it kikawa. And that is not edible, or you got, that's another throat gargle. Gotta be very careful. And this one you're all familiar with. We're talking about preserving Mother Nature. This is what's completely taking over the surface of our hillsides or even way up in a mountain in that week. Okay, that's it for the... any questions, any comments, or whatever?
On the concept, the gargle, so you don't drip that.
Pardon?
Those plants that we gargle with, so you don't drip that.
You don't drink it. Like, you know how you use iodine if you got really bad strep throat? They used to paint your tonsils and that with iodine. But you can't drink iodine. It's poisonous. Well, you might drink a little bit, but not by the cupful. Well, these throat gargles are the same thing. You just gargle and you spit it out, you gargle and spit it out, and it kills it. It has a certain amount of biotic.
Are these plants too also?
I have some plants here that I don't know if you want to come up and maybe as I'm talking about it, you would rather come up to look at the ones I have in packages. Here we have the lovage. That's the type that they smoke. Or you can chew on this. And it's really good for congestion in the lung. And the singers, the drummers even use that. They take a little chunk of it and you chew it and you swallow and keeps your throat clear. I notice a lot of our drummers use that. I have another plant here that's protected now. The yew wood, they're not allowed to cut them down. What they're finding in that, there's in the bark, there's a cure for cancer, a lot of internal problems in the yew wood. Well, that was like a tea. They always drank that like a tea. Maybe I'll start from this corner. Now, this is a lot of vitamin in this. That's the rosehip. You can make tea out of the branches, and you can make tea out of the little rosehip. Now, there are two kinds of rose bush. You'll notice this one, if you take a close-up look on it. This one here has a totally different kind of berry on them. They don't grow very big, they're little tiny berries. This one we call an Indian chapapas, and this one is sukup. This is the medicine. It's got a lot of vitamin. If you're always coughing, continue to take tea made out of rose bush. That doesn't cost you anything. You pay about $6-7 for a little bottle of cough syrup. When you can go way up in the mountain and get a bunch of these, boil it, and just keep drinking and drinking. And you can even put one of these in your mouth and chew on it. And there's a lot of vitamin in there that'll get rid of coughs. This one here, I'd stay away from. If you get a sliver on your hand out of this chapapas, it doesn't, fester and pop out. It just works its way down and very painful. It's exactly like getting a sliver from the devil's club. The devil's club, when you get hit on the hand, it will work its way down. It's really painful. And they don't fester and pop out. Well, this is the same thing. It won't. Labrador tea. I was talking about the Labrador tea and the sopalali. You notice that has gray lining, and so does the sopalali. But the leaves are slender, and these have more rounded bottom to it. Leaves are very important to study if you're going to study plants. What else to look at? The ginger root. There's lots of it around the river. Val picked this from up the interpretive center. Ginger root would be... You can drink it. It's really good flavoring. And the medicinal, people, you say that was good for people having trouble with kidney and urine problems, the ginger root. Another one we have here is the red willow. The red willow, you can eat the berries. I call this one my Indian spoke. If you're walking around up in the hills and there's no water and your mouth gets dry and starts to taste ugly, if you see some red willow berries, take a few and put in your mouth and chew it and swirl it, and after a while your mouth tastes so fresh and it quenches the thirst. And also it's a good medicine. If you take the, say you've got a bad bruise or you got a toothache, if you take a red willow stick and you take your knife, and if you cut it straight down, you come up with big slivers, and that isn't good. But if you take your knife at an angle like this and work it all around, it comes out in a very soft, spongy kind of a poultice. If you take a bit of that and put it over your sore tooth and just hold it there, it'll eventually kill the pain. Or if you have a very bad bruise, boil this and put it over the bad bruise and it'll eventually take the pain out. Now, I went to my doctor here, and he was telling me that he came back from way down south. They were having a convention. He said, you know what I found out down there, Mary? We got a plant here that's just like an aspirin. I said, what is that? He said, the red willow. I said, why didn't you ask me? You didn't have to go all the way down south. I could have told you. But that's what the old people used to use. Remember my dad got kicked by a horse. He was shooting a horse and he used to turn the nail the wrong way and the horse kicked him in the bottom right here. He's cut right in, good, badly bruised. That's all my mother treated was with this. He'd go in a sweat lodge and he'd just put a bunch of this on the bruise and it eventually got the pain out. Another interesting one, very common around here, is the beaver ears. It's Takilawakna. You find that along the rivers. These were good for same thing, kidney and urine problems.